listening for me.
You and Enough's Enough. With a Z.
Great band. A little too glammy for me.
Yeah.
I don't like guys who are prettier than women I date.
I was just, when you were playing Vixen earlier, I showed Rach, you and Rach, the picture of Vixen. I'm like, I asked Rach, how would you like to have to do your hair like that? Because in the 80s, everybody did.
Yeah. Yeah, you avoided that, Rach.
Yeah, you didn't have to have the big hair blow dryer and hairspray and all that stuff. And they're like, Andrew made some comment about it, and then it was like, yeah, the guys look just like that. They had the exact same hair.
I remember so
And Enough's
well,
Enough had the hair, boy.
Girls, I don't know how they got their hair big in the first place.
Yeah.
But then they would bend over and comb it all forward and spray it with Aquanet and then throw it back again.
Yeah, teasing your hair. See, I would have thrived in that environment because I do have very like thick, coarse hair.
Your hair would have been definitely like hairband great.
I could have gotten it to exactly the place I wanted it to be. When I was a teenager, it was like you wanted like the silky, straight, like flat hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get my hair like that because the hair straightening technology just wasn't to that standard yet. So I would straighten my hair with my wet to straight straightener. Millennial girls will know what I'm talking about, but it would just be kind of puffy and still big.
Yeah.
I don't know. Now we've made advancements. I'm doing a lot better now, but yeah, I would have liked the big hair trend. I think
I'll bet you
it's
anything,
a lot of work though, man.
In seventh grade, I worried more about my hair than you did. When I was in seventh grade, it was the era of like Sean Cassidy and the feathered bangs and stuff. And I couldn't figure out how to do it because I was a dork. And, my mom took me to her beautician, that's what you called him back then, and they said I needed to train my hair to be parted in the middle, so they gave me hair tape. You hip to this?
No.
So it was bright pink, and so I had to hide it from my dad, clearly.
Sure.
And so when I would go to bed, I'd go in, I'd part my hair in the middle, and then tape each side down, like alfalfa, with this bright pink hair tape.
So if you had like had to go to the bathroom or something, it'd be like, I'm going to put on a ball cap real quick.
And then in the morning for at least a year, my mom would curl my hair, which didn't help at all. And I would we'd be sitting at the breakfast table and I'd give her a little look and I'd go in the bed and into my bedroom. I'd plug in the curling iron and then she'd come in. I'd be down on my knees because she's so tiny and she'd be curling my hair. And we just left the door open because what are you going to do? And one day my dad walked in on it and my mom jumped so much that she burned my head with the curling iron. And I just had to go to school with a big curling iron burn.
Uh-oh.
And my dad thinking that he'd had a daughter.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There were a lot of older generation folks in that time frame. They're like, can't even tell the guys from the girls.
That was, I told you.
Yeah.
My dad died swearing that Paul McCartney was a woman.
All based on just hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did they not know that people way back in the day had long hair?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, Jesus had long hair. You know?
So, Rach, you loved the Amtrak?
I did. I went to Chicago for like 24 hours this weekend. It was a really quick trip, but we took the Amtrak there and back, and I hadn't been on Amtrak. And well, I guess I took it when I was like 21. I took it from Alton to St. Louis because I didn't want to drive over here a couple of times.
Bet you felt fancy.
It was fun, and it was like $2, which was amazing. But no, it was really cool getting up to Chicago that way, and especially being at Chicago Union Station for the journey back, seeing how many people were there and how many people were using the train.
Yeah.
It was really, really neat, and it's just heartwarming to see that it's still a thing, and so many people are still getting so much use out of it.
Yeah, I loved it when Nick and I went to Chicago. We did the business class, which I think I would always try to do.
Ooh, business.
Right.
What's that like?
Bigger chairs, farther apart, less people per car.
Mm.
When you would walk back, you know, through the riffraff, to get your hot dog or whatever it was, like it was pretty asses to elbows. So,
yeah.
See, we took coach on the way up, and I thought it was totally fine. Like I enjoyed that ride. Kurt and I got to sit next to each other, which was good. I think I would have enjoyed it less if I had been sitting by a stranger. But the way back, we sprung for the roomette. So it's just like basically two chairs facing each other. And then you have a little closet where you can put your coat. And then there's a bunk that you can like pull down from on top of you. So I laid in the bunk for a while. Look, the roommate was...
not lay in the bunk, of course.
If you're in a roommate, you got to do that.
Lay in the bunk.
I was napping in that bunk. I had so much fun. It was really, really nice. Like, it's definitely not the kind of thing we can do every time because it was pricey. It was kind of like, we were springing because it was Christmas time and, oh, we found a good price and blah, blah, blah. But it was really, really nice. Really nice. I recommend that if like you're able to get a good price on the room.
Was Chicago beautiful for Christmas?
It was. Yeah, everything was. They weren't taking down their Christmas decorations too early. I'll tell you what. No, it was really cool, and it was just fun to walk around downtown. Yeah. It's been a long time since I've done something like that, so it was really neat.
I think because I'm obsessed with trains, but I've been obsessed with many things that I ended up not liking. And I think I want to take that train from Chicago to
San Francisco. It's either San Francisco or San Diego. I don't remember.
That looks so good.
It does look cool. I was telling him because we were talking about doing that too. I don't know if I would want to spend 3 or 4 full days, however long the route actually is. But I would want to go through the most scenic parts. So maybe like 1 day or 2 day on that train. It would be really, really neat. But you got to get the roomette if you do that. I'm telling you.
Kev, tell us about antinatalists.
Have you guys seen this? This stuff is just goofy.
We had a guy on a few years ago. Yeah. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Paul Ehrlich was his name.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you do remember that.
I do.
It's the simple version of it is it's people who think that human beings should stop procreating because we're destroying things.
Mm-hmm.
And the argument is because the world can be painful and sometimes life is hard and nobody can give consent to being born because you don't exist before you're conceived. What does that even mean? Like nothing gives consent to be born. Right. Tigers don't, dogs don't, bugs don't, like nothing does.
Right.
And this idea, we are what every other species on the planet is, which is we are what we either evolved into, mm-hmm. or if you believe that we were designed this way, then we are what we were designed to be. Mm-hmm. Either way, we just are what we are. We didn't choose that either, but there's a reason why one of your main drives as a species is to procreate.
It's funny because Nick online says, sounds like a dude who can't get laid.
I mean, it ain't. I get it. Look, I feel bad for people that if it's because they've had a bad life and they think that I would never want to bring a child in. I feel bad for that. I get that. But the arrogance of saying that everyone else should just stop doing this because you think it's weird or because you had a bad experience is just wild to me.
Well, I remember when we had Paul on, he's caught some difficulty because I do think he has 1 or 2 kids.
Yeah.
And so he caught some difficulty over the years of pushing this research that it's like, well, you had kids. And he had a pretty good response to that. I think it was just like, well, I hadn't started the research at that point.
Yeah.
Because he's an older guy. I mean, I think he's almost 90 years old. But his feeling was very much not like, well, you know, I had a bad life and so, you know, I don't think you should bring kids into the world because life can be hard. It's more like we are so rapidly running out of resources and our birth rates are like increasing, not decreasing, that like it's, I mean, we're shortening the potential lifespan of the human race as a whole, not an individual person. We are shortening what the human race will be capable of.
That's a different argument than what the antinatalists are making. They're saying there should be no more humans.
Yes.
That humans should entirely stop, like finish your life, live your good life, but don't have any more. And they think the whole human race should just stop existing.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Which is different than what you're saying, which is that is a more reasonable thing, which is what that early guy was saying, which is, hey, we do probably need to be conscious of what we're doing.
They think that life at its best is still so terrible.
Right.
That not existing is preferable to the pain you go through in life.
The argument is
it's a pretty big movement.
Oh my god, cry about it.
At its core, the argument is essentially we are bad for the planet, so we should just stop making more of ourselves. And
bunch of freaking whiners.
I mean, again, okay, if there's a fair argument to be made that we are bad for other species, but there are certain, there are definitely other species that are bad for different species,
right?
Like we all come up in a different. So again, whether you believe it's a design or if you believe it's evolution, we are what we are supposed to be. Whether that's a good thing or not, we are. So if that means down the road we ruin everything, well, one way or another, through evolution or design, that's how we were built. And none of us chose that, but that doesn't mean you just get to make this argument for everyone else that, you know, we're a disease and we should all just stop procreating, go away.
Yeah.
And I really have a difficult time with the idea that someone can't consent to being born. Well, nothing that's ever existed has consented to existence. Nothing. What is your point? I think you're trying too hard to say something you think is smart.
I mean, I don't have a problem with that, with them holding that opinion. As long as they're not trying to like legislate other people procreating, then fine. If you think it's unethical, then fine. I would rather you not be having children. I don't want to force someone who doesn't want to have kids to feel like they need to have kids.
Oh, no,
and I'm not,
not
saying that's what any of us are saying, but I'm just saying, I'm like, Dave on the stream points out that way of thinking has a way of dying out. It's like, yeah, I mean, you're not going to raise your kids to think that way because you're not going to have kids. I also kind of get the sentiment. A lot of people are out there having kids, I think, without fully exploring everything that actually implies. A lot of people have children and they are maybe financially incapable, emotionally incapable of caring for that child. And it just seems like it's just like, ah, well, it was a thing to do. My neighbors and my friends all had kids, so I had kids. And then you end up like messing up your kids because you didn't take it seriously enough.
I think that's the vast majority of people.
I don't know what the percentage is, but it's definitely a thing that you should do purposefully with a plan and with an idea of how it's going to work rather than just like, well.
Yeah, I think the numbers of people who do that are vanishingly small. Who like actually do it purposefully with a plan and here's how we're going to do it. We didn't do it that way. Most people I know didn't do it that way.
Well, and, I mean, people are waiting longer to have kids now, though, which
is a part
of that.
Very smart.
Yeah.
Very smart. Yeah. It's too bad you can't wait till you're 60. I'm telling you, man, everything looks different to me now. It really does. And I've been on the air for 25 years. People have watched me live for 25 years. And I always admit it. I have broad shoulders when it comes to this. I matured very slowly. I made tons of mistakes. And it's only really in the last few years that something clicked. And it's not like I'm living this great life now, but something clicked where I'm like, oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Now that kind of makes sense.
The problem is that when you are mature and financially stable and all that, you're less physically into running around with kids, right?
Like, for sure.
Because I wouldn't say there's a line, but there's definitely a balance because I had my kid really, by today's standards, I would say pretty young. I was 25 and Susan was 24. So when we had our kids, so that by today's standard, that's pretty young.
Yeah.
It wasn't unusual in the early 90s. That was kind of a regular type thing. But then, you know, my brother didn't have his kid until he was close to 40.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different, it's not bad or neither is bad. Neither is better.
Yeah.
It's just, they're different. You're going to be more stable, more mature, you're going to have better financial stability when you're in your 30s or maybe even 40. But, you know, when you're 25, you're a little more apt to like running around with your kids and dealing with the schedule of having a kid. So when my kid was 18, I was 43. I was okay with handling whatever I had to handle as opposed to being 60 or 65 or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think that I kind of lost my train of thought. There went my consciousness.
Oh, you're just a baby.
I'm just a baby again. Looking around the house. Welcome back, guys. DGS 222. You guys familiar with the sandwich theory?
No, but it sounds like I'll like it.
Sandwich theory is that you always think a sandwich made by someone else is better than one made by you.
Oh, I completely don't subscribe to that.
I knew you would.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. First of all, can I just, with the theories?
You tired of theories?
I'm tired of the theories.
We got way too much time
on
our hands.
The theories are way too annoying. Like, they're all over TikTok, and it's like, people just make things up and go like, it's my theory. I have the running the board on KMOX theory, and my theory is me. It's like, dude, that's not what a theory is. You're just talking.
What you're dealing with,
words are spilling out of your mouth.
What you're dealing with is the exhaustion theory. So.
Oh my gosh. I am exhausted. I'm so tired of reading other people's opinions online. I have to get off of like Twitter and Instagram and seeing all these stupid things people are always posting. I need a break.
Now, you're always... No, that's not true. I started to say something false. To whatever degree you think that Wheeler and I are full of crap because like, oh, when we were your age, blah, blah. But back me up, Wheels. When we were your age, no one had opinions like this.
I completely agree. Yes, no one had opinions like this when I was 18.
Or they did and just didn't have this very, yeah. very easy
didn't
platform
have the means,
no,
yeah.
I
to
really
blast
think,
them out to everybody.
I really think the internet speak is changing the way we think.
Yeah. Well, that I do agree with.
Andrew, haven't you ever thought in terms of like, oh, what if I tweeted this? And then you start to think in terms of the post or of the tweet or like, how would I say this? Because we do it with the show.
It's called the tweeting theory. Yeah.
I know. Oh, my gosh. No, I really think it's like people are changing their habits in the way they speak because they just that's just what they see all the mm-hmm. time. It's monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah.
Look, it's not the end of the world. I am just personally very exhausted by it. And
all the hot takes.
Yeah. And I've been scrolling less. I've been reading books more. It's nice. I just, yeah, the theory thing, dude, that's one that gets under my skin because it'll literally be like, I have the Milky Way candy bar theory. And that means if that's at the store, you're always going to blah, blah, blah. Like, stop talking. Stop.
I wish to subscribe to this theory.
That being said, do you agree with the sandwich theory?
No, I don't think that any sandwich made by another person is going to taste better than my sandwich. I'm going to say 9 times out of 10, I'm going to want my sandwich.
There's also a rationale for it. Would you like to hear that?
Sure.
The rationale is that when Andrew makes me a sandwich, I am necessarily surprised by the ingredients or the way he made it. And I tend to attribute more deliciousness to it. Hmm. Whereas if I make it, I know exactly what's in it. And even if I make it the way I like it, I'm a little bored by it.
You know exactly what it's going to taste like before you even taste it.
Yes.
I can't be trusted with sandwiches.
Why not?
Because I will buy like a week's worth of ingredients for sandwiches.
Yeah.
And use them on a single sandwich.
Okay.
I will put like a half a pound of smoked turkey and like 4 slices of cheese on one sandwich and be like, all right, pretty good lunch.
Speaking of, let me tie this all into a bow with TikTok and sandwiches. I've been on a kick lately on TikTok watching Cat's Deli from New York.
Mm-hmm.
You ever seen Cat's Deli?
Yeah.
Holy Lord. Like being a guy that competed in barbecue and smoked meats and briskets and pastrami and things like that, I swear to God, they put half a brisket, half a pastrami on one sandwich.
Yeah.
They're thick. It's insane. Looking at them right now. Mm.
Sounds good to me.
I told Nick we need to make a pilgrimage there. Go see a Mets game or a Yankees game and go to Cat's Deli. And
Yankees game would be fun.
Would be.
You can go to Broadway.
Speaking of, we're just looking at the Cardinals day games.
Mm-hmm.
And we're pretty excited.
You know, you're not going to see much of us.
Oh, boy.
Let me tell you what, folks.
It is the greatest boondoggle.
It's I can't complain about it.
It's pretty and I think my favorite thing, it's nice having the day off. So when there's like a 1:15 game, that's who didn't want a day off in the middle of the week. But my favorite are the 12:15 games where we all go to the game and
yeah,
then we walk back and we do like an hour of the show.
Because we used to hate those because we used to be like, it's just sitting around all day or whatever. And then you had the idea last year, like, hey, what if we start going to these games? And then it's like, wow, it's fun.
I call it the game theory.
It's called the going to the game theory.
The DGS, afternoon Cardinals game theory.
It's called baseball games instead of work is fun theory.
That's what you all sound like to me. Me, me, me.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
Forget about the things I said when I was drunk. I didn't mean to call you that.
Welcome back, guys. DJ S1041 FM KMOX. Thanks for listening. Thanks for streaming. Thanks for podcasting. Let's take a minute on podcasting, Andrew. How do people do it?
Well, you can go to the Odyssey app. That's where all of them are. That's where we want you to go because that's where we've been told to tell people to go. And then also on the Apple Podcast app or Spotify has them. A lot of people listen on Spotify, which kind of surprised me. I've never listened to a podcast on Spotify.
And, yeah, a lot of people do.
Yeah, a lot of people do. And really, I think pretty much all of the major I mean, if you use a different app, there's an extremely good chance that we're on there.
Yeah.
Dave Glover Show.
Nice. Kevin, what you just did with the microphone, is that a nervous habit you have?
What?
Where you reach out and you move that microphone?
No, it was just bugging me.
Oh.
What was wrong with it?
I don't know. In the moment, it just felt like it was too close. It was the other mic, not the other one. It was, I don't know, it felt like over here and I just went, psh.
Because I've noticed you do that.
Yeah. I do shift my own mic quite a bit. You'll notice I turn it off and then move it because I don't know. I guess if I sit differently or move weird or whatever, it just seems off.
Let's do a DJ's happy hour, and I would just caution the boys. Be careful.
Don't
Razor
say
is here today.
I don't want to hear any of your theories, okay? Just keep it to yourself.
You want to start us out?
Yeah, I've got a story here. Rob Schneider just did an interview. It looks like with the New York Post. And he talks about the fact that he believes that Hollywood will blacklist conservative actors. And look, I want to be upfront here. I do think it's probably pretty rough to be a conservative if you're running in Hollywood circles. The vast majority of these people are extremely liberal. A lot of them are extremely progressive. I could see feeling as though you're in the minority if you're an actor and you're conservative. However, I don't think the fact that Rob Schneider is a conservative, I don't think that's the reason why he hasn't been landing huge roles for the past 30 years. Like, I don't know. I don't think if he were out here like, I love Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, we would all be like, give the man an Oscar. Like, I just don't know if he's the right mouthpiece for this. And I saw a really funny tweet the other day that said, Rob Schneider has basically been like the beneficiary of Adam Sandler's DEI initiative for the past 30 years, because those are the only roles he ever gets. Or in Adam Sandler film. So I don't know. Interesting to hear his perspective, but again, I don't know if this is the messenger that Hollywood conservatives be leading with.
It's nonsense. I don't want to hear from Rob Schneider and Kevin Sorbo and
Dean Cain.
Yeah, like Chachi. Kevin Sorbo, like, dude, Chachi. I didn't know you were. The only reason I know who Kevin Sorbo is because he is conservative and always whining about how he doesn't get roles.
Yeah.
It's not because he's like a great actor that suddenly stopped getting work because he's Republican.
No, that's cope. It's all cope from those guys. Has it hurt John Voight? Has it hurt Clint Eastwood to be a conservative? Has it hurt Mel Gibson's career?
Or like compared to sports, how many conservatives or, you know, people who you assume are conservative are athletes and their careers are doing just fine.
Sylvester
and
Stallone is conservative. Like there are just so many successful ones. And we tend to ignore, these people that want to complain. Well, you're just not good. I mean, that's it. Because the ones that are good have no trouble. Do you think Sylvester Stallone's had a hard time in Hollywood? Do you think Clint Eastwood's had a hard time getting roles or getting projects done? I mean, James Woods is a very outspoken guy, right? Very MAGA. He's talented. He's really good. He's been in movies for, 40 years? He's a very talented guy. It's not what held him back. Dennis Quaid is a conservative guy. You think that that has held him back in any way? He's a movie star. It's about the talent level.
To what degree, if any, are you guys bothered by someone's politics?
Zero.
Like watching a movie?
Yeah.
If they're good, it doesn't matter at all. If the person is good and they're doing a good job, who cares? They're pretending to be someone else anyway, so what's the difference?
Good point.
Yeah, I truly, like, there are many more instances of me being like, of seeing a great performance and coming around on someone I didn't like personally before that. You know, I don't really take the personal stuff into a film too much.
It might be more, it's usually more about just whether or not something about them bothers me. And it's never really their politics or things they've said. It's just kind of more their mannerisms. For a while, like, for example, young Leonardo DiCaprio bothered me. I don't know why. Did not enjoy his persona. Didn't like his voice. But I love the guy that I've seen for basically the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just a different sound. Maybe he's just gotten better. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Well, Leo's a great example because I really, on a personal level, I do not want to meet Leonardo DiCaprio. I don't appreciate the preaching at everyone about environmental issues while you're taking your private jet to Jeff Bezos's wedding. Like, you're a hypocrite. I don't like you. However, I think he's one of the finest actors that is alive right now, and I see most of his films. So, you know.
Anyone box office poison for you? You just can't watch a movie they're in? Like, I really enjoyed Seth Rogen in, like, 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Mm-hmm.
I will not watch a movie with him now.
Really?
And it has nothing to do with his politics. He and I probably line up pretty well. I just can't stand his face.
I don't know if there is anybody that's like that for me, where it's like I won't watch a whole movie just because, like, one of the roles is played by that person. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
What if they're the lead? Are there people that if they're the main character, they'll be like, you'll be like, bleh.
The only person that pops into my mind is Glenn Powell, but I don't even know if I've seen him in anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for whatever reason, I just don't really like his face.
I like Glenn Powell.
No offense to Glenn.
I'm with
you. But he could win me over. If he puts out some great performance, like, Twisters, sure, I'll watch it.
Twisters was fun. I like Twisters.
He's another one for me.
Who's that?
Glenn Powell. Mm. And here's the thing. What I want to say is I just don't like his handsome face. But I like other handsome faces.
Yeah.
It's not like a man being handsome is oh, I can't watch you. No, not that. It's just him. His little smirk.
Yeah, it's so weird because...
He's got that cocky guy vibe.
Have you guys seen Twisters?
No.
Yeah. It's got Glenn Powell in it.
You should watch Twisters.
It's...
Yeah. You'll like Glenn Powell if you watch Twisters.
Oh, by the way, does anyone in this room subscribe to the what's it called... Sorry, Rach, another theory. With Stranger Things. The tomorrow's going to be...
Oh, the conformity theory.
Conformity theory. Yeah,
conformity
no.
gate no. is yes. what they're calling it.
Yes.
No, so here's what's really funny about that. So obviously, it probably sucked. I haven't seen it, but everybody seems to think it sucked. And it's very funny to watch all these people have this like kind of collective psychosis about it, because what they keep saying is like... No, there has to be...
It's not the real one.
There has to be a secret final episode, because otherwise it was just really bad, lazy writing. And it's like, you guys are so close.
Well, there's also...
so close to figuring it out.
There's also the online thing where we're like, we're going to figure it out with secret little things, and there's exit signs here, and that means this, and... Like, okay, you're just thinking too hard. That's
and
it.
And the loose change, I almost said theory.
No, you're right.
I almost said theory.
I told you guys, I don't want
to
hear it.
It's the classic, like, it's very easy to lay out a set of facts in a way that makes it seem believable.
Right.
When in reality, it's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. It's a series of, like, small coincidences. And then some of the stuff is just, like, kind of, like... essentially made up.
Yeah.
So one of them, for example, just on this theory alone, is that it's like, well, everyone's wearing the same glasses in this one scene. So I would like to point out, I'm pretty sure that the Duffer brothers who make Stranger Things, pretty sure they are my age. They are maybe 1 or 2 years older than I am. So they did not grow up in the 80s. They were born in like 1989. So they do not have actual like
experience.
The nostalgia that they are chasing is that of like Stevens, King, and Spielberg, right? It's Back to the Future. It's not actual life in the 80s. So they Googled what did glasses look like in the 80s and then said, all right, get 50 pairs of these and we're putting them on all the extras.
I mean, I'm sure they did more than that.
I'm not sure they did, Kevin.
I think your point still stands. They were born in 84, so they were 5 or 6 when the decade wrapped up. So I would agree that they didn't have like the real lived experience of knowing things, because you're when you're that little, you just see, you know, you have images, you don't have understanding.
They didn't know what it was like to be a 30-year-old pretending to be a 12-year-old in 1984.
Yeah, I gotta say, this will not spoil anything for people that haven't finished the series. That was the longest ending of anything I've ever seen. The ending is an hour. It's like every day. And Andrew, wouldn't you agree there were like 4 false endings?
I didn't see it.
Oh, okay.
I know what happens, but I didn't watch the episode.
And they're like, all right, it's over. And then they're like, but wait, there's more. I'm like, can you just wrap it up?
Oh, if you Google Stranger Things right now, the little D&D dice comes up and you can roll the dice.
Oh,
and then it turns your screen upside down.
Oh, kind of cute. I get it. The upside down.
Rachel's like, I don't know how to fix it. I need to run the boards.
Get an engineer.
It's the upside down theory.
I'm scared. Vecna's going to get me.
Yeah. I do think that way that we overanalyze, and we, I mean, the people online that are doing that.
The royal we. The way those
groups of people overanalyze TV shows and movies is why people hate endings so much. Because you overdo it, and then you build up these expectations in your head, and then it's not what you expected, and now you hate it because it's not what you expected. You just kind of like back off a little bit.
Yeah, it's not your piece of art; it's someone else's piece of art.
Yeah. Well, the worst
thing, you can choose whether or not you enjoy it, but people have a lot of entitlement about how the way a piece of art should present itself. It's like you have nothing to do with the creative process.
Yeah, the worst thing to happen to art in the past century has been quote-unquote fandoms, as they would call themselves, like people who essentially become very obsessive fans and create own stories in their heads, and you know, ships where you think that two characters should be together even though there's no reason and they're not together in the art, but in your mind they're secretly together. Mm-hmm. Which is part of what this was born out of. It was born out of like, oh well, two of the characters are in a relationship together. Two of the like kids are in a relationship together, and it's like, well, no, they're not, and there's nothing in the art to suggest that they are. It's just that you think they should be in your mind.
I think we've struggled with endings
sound
for
crazy.
20 or 30 years now. You sound a little crazy.
I sound completely insane.
Yeah,
I know, you sound crazy
if you haven't seen all the stuff on the internet.
Yeah, if you're not online 23 and a half hours a day, I sound insane.
I really do. I haven't looked into it, but I feel like that whole fandom thing kind of got kicked off by my fellow Star Wars fans.
Hmm. Yeah,
where that was one of
that.
The early groups of like, everything's got to be canon and everything is this. And you overanalyze everything to the point where nothing,
you're the right kind of fan,
where nothing can ever live up to what you want.
I've said many times that I'm trying to think if there's anything that I'm into like that. Can you think of anything that I'm into like that where I'm like deep diving?
No, because you're
Bigfoot.
Not crazy. You're like well adjusted.
Because like
with it.
That ruined Star Wars for me.
I get you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the Carl Middlemanization.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription.
Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today.
I like this song.
I love this song. It's all the guys from Boston, except for the D-head, Tom Schultz. So it's Brad, it's Sib, and Barry Gaudreau. Very cool.
Who is it?
What's Barry Gaudreau.
Barry Gaudreau is the...
No, that's the band called.
Barry Gaudreau.
Oh.
We could have done this for hours.
I gotcha. We'd had a little Abbott Costello thing going there. I'm like, who's that?
Who's on guitar? Barry Gaudreau.
Because I would just have said that's Boston.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
It's Boston minus that jerk.
That
it's
jerk.
Very good.
Row. So I thought this was kind of interesting. The CEO of Tubi, a young woman, had a quote, and it was basically, oh, now I get it. No one knows what they're doing. And I thought that was really interesting.
No one knows what Tubi is. What is Tubi?
Yeah, what's a Tubi?
Tubi is the free or not to be. It's the free movie service that has all those like weird movies on it.
All the Chachi movies?
I don't know what that is, but like, I don't watch those.
It's Scott Baio.
Chachi was what he was in what is that? What is that stupid show?
Happy Days.
Oh yeah. So essentially, yeah, like all the movies that like
the Kevin Sorbo movies.
Yeah, like very very low budget, very not good movies. You know, but there's some they have some real movies too.
Do you agree with her that overall people don't know what they're doing?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. None of us have any idea what we're doing. That is like the number one thing that I have come to realize as an adult is that everyone, how often, and you and Kevin might not know this so much. Rachel knows a little bit more about it, but like just in our beloved company here, every 2 weeks, there's a new mandate that comes down for we should be doing things this way. Now we got to try doing stuff. We're going to change up the way that we name things. We're going to change up the way that we do descriptions and titles and stuff. Because all it is we are just throwing it at the wall and seeing if it sticks.
Hope you get lucky.
And maybe that'll make the numbers go up and it goes, hey, that's pretty cool. The numbers went up. That must have worked. But we don't know if it will or not. And if it doesn't work, then we come up with something else. We throw something else at the wall and see if it sticks. So I cannot help but think that that is the way that it is in every single everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it is. We don't know what we're doing. We're all just fumbling around in the dark trying to keep our jobs.
Brian says, now we're talking about Tubi theories.
And that's called Tubi theory.
Yeah, the Tubi theory is when no one knows what your company is, but then you get publicity by talking about that.
Funny.
did it say what her name was? Is her last name Tubi?
Her name's
Terry Tubi.
It's Ruby Tubi.
Tubi slippers.
Now, I've never watched Tubi, but for some reason I was really familiar with it.
You have it, I'm sure. I mean, I think it's like on every smart TV.
Oh.
It's on every Roku, like, you know, already. It's like a free app you can just watch it on your phone or
right,
whatever.
You should look into that. You guys are always watching weird movies.
Yeah, but those are the ones on YouTube.
I think there is no difference between you
That's
coming in
false.
And being like, we watched Dr. Doolittle. with Robert Downey Jr.
I have no defense. That's the sad part.
And coming in
that.
And watching, like, I watched, we watched my husband's jilted sister's lover, Seven.
I don't watch that crap. I watch, like,
Tubi.
Stuff from the 80s that no one's heard of. And then also, like, Zoolander.
Looking up Tubi movies, just because I like saying it.
Tubi.
There should be a name, excuse me, for the sensation that we all have now of the barrier to entry on any piece of entertainment, even free, because you just can't face it. Like, I've never watched Breaking Bad. Everyone in my life is on my ass. You have to watch Breaking Bad. The way I was on Skip about watching The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have it in me. I don't have it in me for that kind of commitment.
What is it about that? Is it the amount of episodes? Like, it's a lot of seasons?
Yes, but I'm the same way about movies. I don't know if you guys are like this, but like on Netflix, I'll see like, oh yeah, there's that movie from 5 years ago I never watched. And I will watch the opening scene and go, not today.
It's just so long.
I'm not trying to... I do think TikTok probably has a huge part to play in that, honestly. I think we're all getting very addicted to short form content, and it's becoming difficult to focus on other things. Like people make the joke.
I feel it in my brain.
Yeah, no, it's the kind, we have to start weaning ourselves off of this type of thing. It is not good for our brains to only want to consume 30 seconds worth of content at a time.
Yeah, remember I bought that book about the Native American vampire, and I read 5 chapters, really enjoying it, and then it got to the point where I'm like, can someone just kick me in the balls? I mean, I'd rather do that than read this book.
We are getting addicted to like the shorter form. And like when it comes to like watching a show or something, a lot of times it'll be 8 o'clock at night and I'm like, oh yeah, we should watch an episode of Fallout or whatever. And then it's like, but then it'll be 9 o'clock and I'm that much closer to having to go to bed. It's like, well, what else am I going to be doing with that time? Nothing. I'm going to watch 100 TikToks and I'm going to watch the first second of all of them because I just scroll immediately.
Man,
TikTok theory.
Sucks to be you guys.
You're not like that?
Wheeler's, no, Wheeler's like, you. The short form content energizes me.
I mean, I do both. They're just different. It's all about the vibe.
God, I loathe you.